Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. It's time for Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and John O'Bacon. Episode 89 for October 1st, 2009. Mind Touch. This show is brought to you by listeners like you and your contributions. We couldn't do it without you. Thanks so much. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, and open source software. Joining us, as always, the great Randall Schwartz from his stained glass den somewhere in the Northwest.
Indeed. Hello, Leo. Yes, in fact, the stained glass, if you're watching the live feed, you can see it behind me. And I've had offers in the chat room to buy that from me. No, you can't have it. It's integral to the house.
Yeah, the house would fall down. It's actually structurally.
It would be really cold for me to sleep because there'd be no window there.
What kind of nutcase wants to buy your stained glass?
You know, I get all kinds. I really do get all kinds of the show.
That voice there is John O'Bacon. He is the community manager for Ubuntu, the author of The Art of Community, brand new from O'Reilly. And his t-shirt says, Bacon is...
Bacon makes everything better. Yeah.
You know, if I were named Bacon, I'd have a lot of Bacon logo wear.
Yeah, it was a very popular name when I was at school.
Really?
Yeah. Now, my best friend, Ak, bought me this for my birthday, and I it's the first time I've worn it, actually. And, yeah, it fits, so I'm very happy. My only
hang
bacon
out with people
t-shirt.
Named Lettuce and Tomato by any chance?
That would be funny. John Hodgman sent me a scarf that was patterned to look like bacon, raw bacon. So
awesome.
I haven't actually had the nerve to wear it in public. Maybe next time you come in, Jono, I'll
that'd be great. I might accidentally eat it, though, which is a problem. It's happened before.
This bacon's delicious. A little chewy, a little fuzzy, but delicious.
And since you talked about Jono's shirt, you also talk about my shirt, which is the Net at Night shirt, actually.
Yes, Interweb
one of the ones from the collection of I forget her name.
Laurie LeBeau Walsh, our wonderful t-shirt designer, and she does all our album art as well. She's just great.
Exactly. So yeah. Very nice that I picked the black shirt today because I felt like wearing black and I didn't know I was going to clash with Jono, but that's okay.
You're not clashing. You two look way too good together, as a matter
fashion
of fact.
Disaster.
Yeah. So who do we have on the show today, Mr. Randall Schwartz?
Well, I met this gentleman. I will use the term loosely, as you'll see. I met this gentleman at the OSCON party that Linux Fund threw back a couple months ago. It turns out that Aaron Fulkerson, who is our guest today, works for MindTouch. I think he's the CEO of MindTouch. And he was one of our sponsors for the party and threw a lot of money at Linux Fund so that we could throw the party. And some of it actually ended up as part of a contribution actually to Linux Fund. So I really appreciate that he was able to do that. And he seemed like a pretty nice guy. And he's been pestering me for the last couple of months. Can I be in your show? Can I be in your show? Sure, why not? So I brought him on today. We're going to bring him on today.
As you're going to see, MindTouch. He is one of the best marketers in the business. He's really good at it. I think we first met at a conference where he was showing me MindTouch, and my reaction was, I got to get this thing. So maybe he can sell me on it again. I still haven't got it yet.
Very cool. But before we bring him on, let's talk about the last couple of weeks of shows, because we've had some amazing people on the last couple of weeks. 2 weeks ago, we had Kent Beck on, and I've gotten a lot of great feedback about that show. A lot of people had not understood really what extreme programming was all about and pair programming and all that stuff. So that show really woke up a lot of people about the possibilities for that. I'm really, really thankful that Kent was able to come on the show and talk to us about that. And actually, as an inspiration for that, there's Uncle Bob Martin, who's also another legend in the industry, has wrote me like the next day, said, oh, I got to be on the show now, too. I can't get on there without me. So Uncle Bob is going to be coming on. Uncle Bob Martin, yeah. He's another legend.
Is he playing acoustic guitar and whistling his grandchildren?
No, but he's quite. I follow him on Twitter, and he's quite the character.
Yes, definitely. So he's going to be fun to have on. And but last week's show, I really don't know how I'm going to keep this up, but we'll try. Having Linus Torvalds on the show was just an amazing experience for me. It came about because actually Linus and I go back a ways. He's been on a couple of the Geek Cruises And I actually bought him his first microbrew when he came to Portland a few years ago. And he also came to one of the Portland Linux users groups meetings at my request to watch me give a talk about Git, which is really strange. He's over in the corner of the room being very quiet and nobody recognizes him, which is really cool. But midway through my Git talk, I had a question. So I turned to him and said, how does that work?
Oh, boy.
The room went quiet. It was
Yeah. And did he respond or did he just pretend?
Oh, yeah. He actually answered some questions from the group. It was really great. And so he doesn't normally hang out at like user groups, user conferences. And he only goes to like two conferences a year and he rarely gives interviews. So, but it was out of my relationship with him over the years that when I tapped him on the shoulder last Monday as just finishing up his talk, I said, I'd love to have you on Boss Weekly. And he says, yeah, absolutely. I'll do it. So
in fact,
he even showed up the wrong day. He showed up Tuesday instead of Wednesday for the talk. So that was, it shows how interested he was. And he came to the party too. We had the Linux Fun party Tuesday night and he came in and he's first said, I'm just going to have a beer and leave. And he says, wait, there's a pool table over there. And he played pool for 2.5 hours with some very surprised and excited guests at our party.
It was amazing. It was like the worst kind of, have you ever seen that show TMZ?
Yeah,
where they follow people around, the paparazzi follow people around. It was like a geek version of that. He was playing pool, all of these people swarming around him. It's like, oh my God, Linus Torvalds is in the same room and it's hit a pool ball. I wonder which pocket it is. Is he very good? You know, there's this massive kind of fan fodder going around.
We're not used to that, are we? But it's kind of cool when it happens, I think.
Yeah.
I just wanted to again publicly thank Linus for being on the show. And that was just a real treat for me. I mean, it's right. I had the fanboy worship thing going on. I was like, that's cool. I got him on. So it was a lot of fun.
He was
fun,
a great guest, though. And he was, I love the fact that at the end of the interview, he said, go to hell.
I got no message for you. Just go. That was pretty good.
He's great. No, and it was a great interview. Well done, guys. We're really glad we could get that. I mean, you can't do a Floss show without at least once talking to the king.
Exactly.
The king.
And maybe after RMS is on, then we can get somebody else good. No, I'm just kidding.
Don't make me start.
Just kidding.
Should get RMS and Miguel on at the same time.
Oh,
God.
Is Miguel, what's going on? Why is Miguel, you're talking about Miguel Icaza.
Yeah.
Who has been on the show before. What's the controversy? Yeah, what's going on?
The controversy right now is the fact that apparently RMS was at a Software Freedom Day event in Boston and was talking about Mono. And as we're all aware, you know, RMS and Mono, they don't go on very well. There's a bit of a relationship problem there, and
because Mono RMS, is kind of a .NET, open source .NET.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think RMS really thinks it's an actual disease because he seems to keep thinking of it as a disease as opposed to this software development platform. But he and he said that Miguel de Caza, who is one of the primary architects of Mono, who works at Novell, and is the co-founder of the GNOME project, the open source free software GNOME project that was part of the GNU project. Said that he's a traitor to free software.
Wow.
Which is a pretty strong statement.
Wow.
And from what I can, from my personal perspective, a completely factually incorrect statement as well. So luckily he'll never hear this because we only kick out MP3s now.
And he wouldn't dare. He wouldn't dream of listening. We'll talk about that at the end of the show. We'll make sure that there's an RMS compatible version for all and sundry.
So that's basically the controversy, and it's nothing particularly new. It's just RMS is not happy with Miguel and Mono, and that's it basically.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. All right, well, let's get to our guest because I want to talk about Mind Touch. Now, Aaron Fulkerson is on the line. Actually, I think wherever Aaron goes, there is a party. He is the CEO of Mind Touch. Where are we talking to you? Where are you, Aaron Fulkerson?
I'm in beautiful downtown San Diego.
Ah, lovely place.
Actually, I'm in Little Italy, technically, in San Diego, which is where Mind Touch Intergalactic HQ is.
Joining us from Intergalactic HQ, it's Aaron Fulkerson. You co-founded Mind Touch. In fact, we met was it Podcast Expo?
Blog World Expo.
Blog World.
Great event to go to if you're in new media or blogging. I think it's coming up soon, and you're going, aren't you, Leo?
I am. I'm
going
to be there speaking October 16th to announce a new video initiative for Twitch.
Right.
Yeah. So why would you go to Blog World? You're an open source project.
Yeah, so we went to Blog World because the founders of Blog World are great guys. I think we went there in 2006, and being an enterprise open source software company, it doesn't make a lot of sense for MindTouch to go to Blog World. So we won't be at this year's Blog World. I'm not sure we were at last year's either. I don't know if we were.
Well, and yet your software could be used, I guess, for a blog. It certainly is. It really makes compelling websites. Why don't you tell us a little bit about MindTouch?
Sure. So I guess the easiest way to think of it is kind of an open source SharePoint in some respects. You see people using it for internal collaboration or online collaboration. Most of the people in IRC and watching the show right now have used MindTouch. It powers the Mozilla Developer Center. And when you look at it there, it looks a lot like a wiki. But if you look at some of the Washington Post properties powered by MindTouch, you'll see that it looks more like a full-featured community site. I think of it in terms of MindTouch delivering a collaborative network. And what I mean by that is it makes it really easy to connect disparate systems, data sources, web services, and have a single, easy-to-use interface that looks a lot like a wiki to collaborate. So if you look at who runs gov.com, it's a Washington Post property, and that's entirely powered by MindTouch. And it's a collaborative network on the politically influential in DC, where you can go contribute content. And then there's also blogging there and other community aspects as well.
So is it a wiki?
Yeah. So good question. So when you look at MindTouch, what you'll see is as an end user or admin who just downloads and installs the software, that it has it looks like a wiki. But the reality of it is there's a very easy to use wiki-like interface that's decoupled from the business logic. The business logic is a composition of RESTful web services. There's an access control layer that everything goes through, a scalable and extensible message bus that can communicate on HTTP, SMTP, and soon even XMPP, and then a web service orchestration engine. So what that means is you can use MindTouch to glue together web services, databases, enterprise applications, and then have a very easy to use interface for editing content and pulling content together that could be video, graphs, charts, and basically provides an easy to use and collaborate interface that looks very structured on a whole system of heterogeneous unstructured data.
So is the goal of MindTouch to be based around content, or is it around software development? I mean, is the system useful for people who want to produce software, or is it mainly for businesses who want to share information?
Yeah, this is a great point. So you can use it as an application server. Amazon has used it as an application server. We see a lot of people doing that, where they'll do application development right on top of the web services layer. And they'll either use our interface, or they'll write their own interfaces on top of the web services layer when they use it as an app server. If they use it as an app server where they do the development inside of our framework instead of on top of the web services, we even provide tools where you can package those applications and share them with other MindTouch users. So you can write an application that's like a composite of external systems or a situational app or workflows, and then package those applications and disseminate them to other people using MindTouch. We just launched an app catalog at our developer community. In fact, it's developer.mindtouch.com, and you'll see there's an app catalog. It's still pretty young, but there's some very interesting apps in there that people have developed. So we see both, Jono, is you'll see folks that are doing application development where, if it's behind the firewall, where that's really profound is if you look at SharePoint, which we compete directly with, what happens with SharePoint is it'll take a 10 to 12 month timeline with a lot of engineering resources to roll out a custom solution for an organization. And with MindTouch, we commonly see it take a month and a half with some IT guys that can use the built-in scripting language and tools for creating their own custom workflows, dashboards, reports.
So on Floss Weekly, it's fair to say that we have a lot of dorks who listen to the show who are turned on by programming languages. You know, we're included. What kind of platform do people write this software in? I mean,
so we did end users, and turns out that the number one programming language people use to extend the platform is PHP. Number two is Java. The business logic itself, again, I reiterate, it's all RESTful web services, meaning stateless and everything that REST means, right? So we implemented, and oh no, guys, are you guys ready to call me a traitor too? It's implemented in C Sharp on .NET or Mono. So 90% of our distribution.
Burn the witch! Burn him!
Burn the witch!
He comes from Microsoft. What do you expect?
You're a traitor. Yeah,
so go on, Jono. Jono.
He just wanted to call you a traitor. It's no big deal.
I'm just going
to
carry on calling you a traitor. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, carry on. Go ahead. I'll be quiet now.
Yeah. So anyway, like I was saying, most of the development that takes place on the platform is in PHP, then Java. And then thirdly, it's in web languages. We have this sandbox language that we call DeckyScript, and it just provides a way for people to develop behavior that cannot possibly be malicious. So the site admin has governance over what methods are invocable through DeckyScript. So it provides a sandbox for users to do custom behavior that can never be malicious. And we see a lot of people doing development in DeckyScript.
So it's pretty awesome.
So is the goal that MindTouch is going to be a platform in which anyone can really dig into? So, you know, you're not defining an infrastructure and an API with one particular language. The idea is that if someone's got an interesting idea, you guys want to make sure that people can plug in and share their ideas and build these tools, right?
Correct. So we're going to continue to provide the platform. We're packaging more enterprise modules and solutions on top of the platform now, but it's my expectation that we'll see more from our partner ecosystem, which is growing very rapidly, developing vertical solutions on top of the platform that they'll take to market to their customers.
So is DeckyScript like similar to PHP then in terms of how it interacts? I mean, is it embedded in the web pages, or how does someone interact with that?
Sure. So there are hooks in PHP. So you see a lot of people that will do the development on PHP, and it's great for folks who might not be very disciplined programmers, because they can hack at the front end and never mm-hmm. break the business logic, because you're hacking at a decoupled user interface that's all PHP mm-hmm. that sits on top of the web services layer. And there's hooks in that PHP layer for the web services or the API so that they're exposed to you. DeckyScript itself, though, looks a lot like Lua. And you edit it within MindTouch, either within the editor, so you can, you know, edit a page like you would a wiki page, and then write custom code in DeckyScript, or within global templates, you can do that. What it really excels at is providing, again, this kind of sandbox where the site admin has governance over what you can access. Mm-hmm. And also it really excels at like processing XML. Anything that would be like extract, transform, load, DeckyScript does pretty well.
And I understand this is derived originally from, or at least inspired by, MediaWiki. What was the process to going from MediaWiki to what you have now?
Right. So our initial product release was a MediaWiki fork. That what we did is we said, well, WikiText is nonsense. Sorry, you guys can scream and yell about that, because I know people are pissed about that too. You need to adhere to open standards. You know, Wiki. We've got a standard for this web presentation layer. It's called XHTML and CSS. So we gutted MediaWiki, added support for XHTML, added a WYSIWYG editor, and changed how files are handled, added a hierarchy, and that was our first release. Concurrent to the development of that first release, which we put out there just to get feedback very quickly and begin to build a community, we began implementing the next generation of MindTouch, which, again, was implemented all of the business logic as web services. For all of you out there who are MediaWiki users who've used MediaWiki for a long time, like the folks at Mozilla, the reason why Mozilla migrated to MindTouch is maintaining MediaWiki's code base, which is very much spaghetti, is really challenging, time-consuming, and it's brittle. Once you start making changes, you don't know what ramifications it has throughout the rest of the system. Mike Shaver, who's now their VP of engineering, back then he was the evangelist, has a nice article on Dr. Dobbs Journal about why he migrated Mozilla Developer Center to MindTouch. And it's about extensibility and maintaining it.
So MediaWiki was really only like an alpha release then, in a sense. There's no common code between the old MediaWiki and what you're currently shipping.
That's basically correct. There is some logic in the PHP client on the front end that is some remnants of MediaWiki, but we're just slowly kind of shedding that. And there's probably mm-hmm. some code pass in there from in that PHP layer from MediaWiki, but most of it is just some of that code's not even actually executed ever, and we're just slowly cleaning it up over time.
So give us some idea of how people use this. What I mean, is it just to replace SharePoint? I mean, what are people doing with it? You've shown us some examples.
Yeah, so SharePoint is an interesting creature. When you look at SharePoint, what most people don't realize about SharePoint is, and obviously I have some relationships with Microsoft, so let me just say right now that this is my opinion, okay? So when you look at SharePoint, it's clear what they're doing. Increasingly, all of their productivity tools will only run inside SharePoint. Right. Like with Microsoft Project 2010 only runs in SharePoint. So Microsoft's strategy with SharePoint is, you know, everybody thinks that they've been lagging on the web. And the reality of it is they've been reticent to move anything to the web without having a platform they can control. SharePoint is that platform. So this is how Microsoft is moving on the web is through SharePoint. So similarly, we saw this early on and we said, well, look, where it's funny because Steve Ballmer even came on recently and he said that SharePoint is a content operating system. Interestingly enough, when Steve's the other founder of MindTouch, he's far smarter than me. He should be here actually, but he's the CTO. I'm the CEO.
When you say this, Steve, you're not talking about Steve Ballmer.
No.
Okay. I just want to make sure that was clear.
No, that's Steve Bjorg.
Bjorg.
B-J-O-R-G.
Okay.
You know, he's been calling MindTouch a content operating system from the very beginning. So it was interesting to hear Ballmer say that too. But, you know, similar to what SharePoint has done, MindTouch is doing the same thing, but it's with an open platform that is technology agnostic. You can extend it in any programming language. It runs on any operating system. We see people running it on Solaris Spark, BSD, Linux. 90% of our distributions on Linux. Similar to their strategy where SharePoint is this platform people will build applications out on top of, and Microsoft will ship applications only on top of that, we see a lot of people doing that with MindTouch. So I'll give you some examples. Behind the firewall, we see people deploying MindTouch, creating custom workflows, integrating ERP systems, CRM systems, databases, web service infrastructures, and also internet applications. Okay. So externally facing, we see things like Amazon's Shelfari, that's a shelf like a bookshelf, Ari, Shelfari, like Shelf Safari, .com, which is built out on largely on MindTouch as well, where they used it as an app server, or the other one that you saw, which is whorunsgov.com.
Yeah. Interesting. Hmm. And I presume intranets. You say people use it for CRM?
So people use it to extend CRM. It's not a CRM application in and of itself. It's more about improving. I'll give you some examples. So we'll commonly see people who have, let me take a step back. The problem that we're solving is inherent to every organization, regardless of size. You guys all know this. The fact is when we go to do work on a daily basis, we're forced to go out and gather information from a multiplicity of disconnected applications and data silos. It's very time consuming. Then we have to hammer this information into an actionable format that we can share with our colleagues or that we can make decisions based on. And
once dashboard.
Yes. It's more collaborative than that.
Okay.
But, you know, you take a look at what the end result is if you're not using MindTouch and it's a raft of Microsoft Office files that get sent off an email. Now, if you use MindTouch, what it looks like instead is you connect your ERP systems, your legacy systems, your databases, and then not programmers, you know, maybe slightly technical users have this Microsoft Word in your browser-like experience where the data is real-time from the data source and it can consist of text, video, charts, graphics, spreadsheets that are and dashboards and reports.
So is the goal here, so for example, at Canonical, you know, we use a bunch of different technologies. We use, you know, various wiki software, mailing list software, communications tools, document management, all that kind of stuff. And there are lots of individual chunks that have to talk together, and we use, you know, the same authentication system and all that kind of glue that glues these different pieces together. Is the idea with MindTouch that it's a single system with components inside it? So basically, where you'd ordinarily have lots of different components that you strung together, you have one component, which is MindTouch, with different modules inside it. Is that kind of the idea?
Yeah, I mean, but MindTouch isn't like this, you know, I think of it more as you have an authentication system, you have a CRM system, you have databases. What you would do is add MindTouch to your existing systems, and it provides the connective tissue for these systems very easily. And then you get more value out of them. The
right.
concept of MindTouch isn't new. It's just that what we've done is moved it up the stack. So previously you might use a portal solution to do this kind of thing. It would require a lot of engineering, and the end result would be something where people go passively consume information from it and they don't really collaborate there. With MindTouch, right. It's a collaborative experience. It's much quicker to get to that, you know, information agility where you're pulling information from all of these different sources and you have an easy to use interface to collaborate on.
So just in, so I can understand it better, if I'm wanting to collaborate right now today using kind of traditional technologies, I'll typically use email, maybe an email, a wiki, and possibly IRC as a, you know, as a reasonably it's a technical organization. And that works well for people to work together. What's the benefit of going over to using something such as MindTouch? It's still collaboration, from what I understand. Is it an enhanced, a quicker form of collaboration?
What you're leaving out, though, Jono, is all the other information that you need to get in that enhances this communication. So you talk about the communication part, but this sounds like it does both, right? It's gathered the information, allows you to share the information, and then communicate around it. It sounds like Google Wave.
Yeah, there's a lot of similarities with Google Wave. There's no doubt about that. You look at what Google Wave is, it's a collection of web services. There's a message bus, and there's an easy-to-use collaborative interface. You look at MindTouch, you've got the same elements there. It is very similar to Google Wave. I've heard that comparison on many occasions.
Yeah.
Right. As you're kind of convincing people to move over to like a new and enhanced method of collaborating with each other with all of these benefits that MindTouch offers, you know, old habits die hard. Are you finding that's one of the complexities in encouraging people to move over? They're like, no, my email works, you know, in the same way that years ago people were like, I like Usenet. What's wrong with Usenet?
No, so the advantage that we have is that when you download and install MindTouch out of the box, it looks like a very polished enterprise wiki. And we all here know that everybody needs an enterprise wiki. So
God, yes.
Yeah.
So, two or
so
three.
More commonly, go on.
I need two or three.
Well, you need to migrate over all of your documentation to MindTouch. Everything's stored as XHTML.
We do. You know, I've been thinking, as you know, for years about doing this. But I misunderstood it first. When I first saw it, I thought it was a way to do a website. And it's really not. It's really more for a kind of an intranet, right?
Yeah. So that's our number one use case. But we see stuff like, you know, Mozilla's Developer Center, where it's very much about documentation.
Right.
Autodesk is rolling out all of their product documentation on MindTouch. We have this new capability that allows
collaboration. It's just public, more public collaboration.
Absolutely correct. Yeah. So when it's very much about documentation, then MindTouch really excels there. And with the new content moderation module we have, where it's kind of like Crunchbase, if you looked at Crunchbase and how you can submit edits to Crunchbase, and the experience of editing, the barrier is frictionless. Our content moderation module is very similar, but not so highly structured, which can be a little bit confusing with Crunchbase.
Right.
Well,
XMPP, you're mixing XMPP in. Does that mean you're going to have Jabber clients that can cooperate then with the data, and the Jabber conversation can somehow update the content?
That's yes. But what I think is more interesting is we commonly see folks who will set up a workflow. Maybe it's like about, what is it? I'm forgetting what it's called. I saw one of these recently. There's a workflow by which you get reimbursed for something from work. I forget what it's called.
T&E.
Yeah, that's it. But somewhere along that chain, MindTouch could send out a message to an accounting system that sets off a process there. So when we look at our messaging bus, the way that we think of our messaging bus is for events within MindTouch triggering messages to external systems that can set out processes. And then, of course, because everything within MindTouch is web service, can then receive information back from that application or process. Does that make sense, or is that too abstract?
I think I get what you're saying. I think it seems like the concept of MindTouch is kind of an abstract concept that I imagine that when you see it up close is really obvious. I get the impression it's one of those things that's fundamentally difficult to explain to people. Like, I remember when wikis first came out in general, people just didn't understand the concept that you could update a web page, you know, from the browser. Have you found that explaining to people what the hell MindTouch does is difficult in itself?
I can use myself as an example. I've seen MindTouch in action. I've heard this explanation. I've talked to Aaron before, and I still have no idea what it does.
Well, that's awful, because then I'm doing a terrible job explaining it.
No, you're not. I think it's because, I think, Jono, you kind of hit it on the head, which is that it's almost amorphous. It's kind of, it's kind of what you want it to be, like a wiki is.
Yeah, so you look at the platform, and I see people saying like, oh my God, this mumbo jumbo buzzword bingo in IRC.
It's restful.
You should really look at some of the demo videos, and we generally don't have to explain what it is. That's by virtue of us being open source. The fact is that right now we're a couple years ahead of anything else that's in the marketplace. I know that Oracle and SAP and even what Microsoft SharePoint 2010 is messaging around, this whole notion of, hey, look, you can quickly create situational applications that you can throw away later. It's IT guys that are doing it. You can do rapid application development. You can create dashboards from all these disconnected systems. That's pretty new. It's not new. What's new is how easy you can do it and how quickly you can do it. Right. Just like with Wikis.
You can use it for workflow management, then, is what you're saying. It's one of the use cases is workflow management. I mean, if I had, instead of carrying paper around from one place to another to get signatures and stuff, I could use this for that instead.
Correct. You could implement, you could automate that process. Correct.
Ah, okay. Well, then I have implemented systems similar to this, and it has been a lot of work getting all the pieces together. So if MindTech made it simpler for me to do that for my clients, that would be really handy.
Yeah, so we just started a channel initiative where we're bringing on partners that are developing applications. So some of the kinds of things that we're seeing in OEM deals, like I know that there's this one vendor that's developing a collaborative business intelligence application on MindTouch. Makes sense. Some of the other things we've seen is around supply chain management software where, you know, in order to get a macro view of what's going on inside your supply chain, you have to jump into a bunch of very ugly interfaces and kind of pull stuff out and then piece it together. And it's laborious. Instead, we see systems integrators using MindTouch to layer MindTouch on top of these systems.
Okay, cool. Now, go ahead. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to say then, so how much of this is open source? Because I know there's only some piece of it that's open source. How much do I get when I just download and play with it for free versus how much of this is paid for layers on top of that?
So great question. We're applying what I think of as an open core model, meaning that MindTouch commits to leave the vast majority of our code base as free and open source. And you can go download that. And out of the box, it looks like a lot like an enterprise wiki. There are a lot of adapters that are included with that, but most of the like Oracle adapter, SQL Server adapter, those Salesforce, those are proprietary and you need to buy the commercial version to get access to them. There's also a suite of desktop tools that are proprietary. And we're adding, you know, nearly every month or two new modules like the content moderation I spoke of, or another one around project management and corporate initiative dashboards and workflows. There again, that's proprietary that if you want it, you need to buy a commercial license.
There's also a VMware appliance I'm seeing in the chat room. Garrick is in the chat room.
Garrick is the fellow who drank beers with you, Leo, at Blog World.
I remember him very well.
he had a man crush on you, I think. You know,
you were one of his idols. I don't remember him that well. No, I do. I remember Garrick very well. And so that's very handy. So, but if I use the VMware appliance, I get that same basic functionality that I get with the open source version, right?
Right. The VMware appliance, even on the open source version, we provide a script that calls out to our servers and updates it. We were one of the first people who rolled out on virtualization. It gave us a huge leg up in the marketplace. Oh, that's were doing virtualization back in 2006, and it's very popular.
Oh, that's neat.
So just going back to the, we talked, Randall brought up the subject of open source, and obviously this is the free and open source Libre show. So talk to us about the community that's behind MindTouch. I mean, it sounds like there's an open source core, but it sounds from what you're saying that all the interesting bits are proprietary. So is there interesting bits that are open source that people can play with and use without giving you $1,000?
Yeah, so we have a 10-user license of the commercial version, but more importantly, the free and open source version is far superior to any of the commercial enterprise wikis that are out there on the market. And I, you know, download it and take a look. You'll see for yourself.
Wow.
It's been a bit of a challenge that our free and open source version is so damn good. I'm always happy as the competition catches up.
And as you've kind of, so clearly you're whipping them all. Clearly the competition sucks and you're doing a great job. And how have you had a community swarm around MindTouch as it's grown in success? I mean, MindTouch is something that I hear, like I hear it dropped into conversation whenever I go to conferences, I hear people talking about MindTouch. Have you found that there's been a community gather around it to contribute as developers and to continue to refine the open source part of it?
Yeah, so we get contributions often. I think our developer community is like around 10,000. It's floating around there. Those are active members. So you can look at developer.mindtouch.com. The forums are very active. We get our MindTouchers, you know, paid employees are very active in the forums, but the community is very large, very active, very passionate about it. They're active in social media marketing. They're active in documentation, translation. We see some really amazing applications being developed in DeciScript. We have this DeciScript kind of blurs between jQuery. So you see a lot of people doing some really interesting things inside DeciScript cross jQuery for user interface, building like kind of rich internet application type things within MindTouch. Then we've received contributions from Washington Post, Microsoft, Capgemini. I don't remember all, but there's a lot of big companies that have provided contributions to the open source version as well.
And how have you balanced so it sounds like there's a thriving community. How have you balanced the often careful balance between the company and the product, so you have got some closed source proprietary extensions that's the bread and butter of your business, but you're giving away this strong open source core. Have you found that relationship with the community has been generally fine, or has it been a little bit tense at times?
I mean, there's always a tension between the needs of the company and the desires of the community. And when those two are in harmony, then things are great. If the company pulls too hard in one direction, the company will be hurt by it. If the community pulls too hard in one direction, the community will be hurt by it too. So it really is a balancing act. I think that the open core model is really the best business model for open source, at least in our space it is. And what I mean by that is the preponderance of the code is free and open source. We stack value adds on top of that. Over time, as we add additional value adds to that proprietary layer, some of those value adds that were yesterday's get pushed down into the core. So that way the core product's always improving, which is good for the community. And there's just enough held back by the company to make sure that we can actually keep the lights on and pay our folks.
And are you finding that other companies are getting involved in selling MindTouch modules or extensions and things like that?
Yeah, there's more desktop. Somebody, Kay Shep, had asked me this, if there was desktop clients that worked with Core. And I said no, but that's actually not true. I just recalled this. There's been partners like Screen Steps and Aurelia, I'm forgetting some other ones, that are client-side applications that are extending MindTouch. And extending MindTouch, because everything's a web service, right, is very, very simple. So we do see people building applications connecting to MindTouch. The velocity is definitely accelerating as well.
Fantastic. It sounds like a phenomenal product. So if somebody's listening to the show right now and they want to get involved, you say developer.mindtouch.com. Is that the right place for them to go?
Yeah, go to developer.mindtouch.com. I saw some people in IRC asking about where to download it. Just go to mindtouch.com/download, and there's the core edition there. We package for most major Linux distros. Ubuntu, of course, is our favorite distro in the community. It is. I was looking at the statistics the other day, and I was very surprised, because it strikes me as being a desktop operating system, but it's actually one of the, I think it's the most popular Linux distro that people are installing MindTouch on.
Good. That's what we like. Two great things coming together at last.
Like peanut butter and chocolate. Yes.
How much of the open source part of the actual core of the application is being contributed to by the outside, and how much of it is layers on top of that, though? Did you say you have 10,000 developers? Are they layering on top mostly, or are people actually turning in C# code?
Well, I'll give you one example. Harmonix, the rock band guys. I know Jono does know the company.
Why do you say that for?
You know, I forgot about this. This is like the perfect segue.
Is he sensitive to this? Are these? Is this the pictures you were talking about?
No.
Were you playing Rock Band at some point?
I play
You're
Guitar
a bit
Hero
of a fanatic, aren't you?
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with that game. I love Guitar Hero. It's a problem, to be honest with you. It affects my job.
So what are they doing with Mind Touch?
They're it's kind of like a Portal 2.0 initiative is what I gather. So the entire company's rolling out Mind Touch. They didn't like how our commenting worked. So they went into the code. They made modifications at the C# level. They submitted a patch to the services layer and then also to a few of the user interfaces and said, we'll come on as a commercial customer as long as you roll this into your commercial package and core 2. And we're like, okay, you know. But most of the contributions are on top of the platform, not down in the C#. I will say that because of the architecture of MindTouch, you don't really have to edit our C# code anyway. You can modify the behavior of the platform by writing your own web service and then federating that web service with MindTouch. So you can take an external applications API and then with a simple XML manifest, expose that behavior of that applications API through to your users, and to them, it's MindTouch doing the work.
That makes more sense then. Cool. Hey, before we get too lost in the rest of this conversation, I want to thank you for being one of the co-sponsors for the Linux Fund party at OSCON.
Yay.
Yeah, that was a blast. Well, I think it was really because of you, Randall, that the party was so much fun.
Well, I did my part too, but it was actually my friend Bill Harp actually coordinated that. I think you met him at the party as well. But I know that, you know, without your contribution, that party wouldn't have gone off in the way that it did. So I just wanted to thank you for that publicly. So thank you.
That party was a good thing and a bad thing.
And he has pictures to prove it.
That's right.
Well, put it this
way.
The day after that party, I had to do an interview for the book with O'Reilly, a video interview, and we couldn't use it.
Oh, dear.
I look like I've been dug up.
Oh, dear.
So I had to go and record it again.
I would have liked to have heard that phone call. Jono, you know that interview we recorded with you the other day? You look dead, actually.
that was a nice way of describing it. So, yeah, I blame Aaron and Randall for that.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, blame me all you want. Hey, Aaron, what's the CodePlex Foundation?
So I'm sure I saw people talking about the CodePlex Foundation in IRC earlier when they were chanting Miguel's a traitor. No, that's not true. Most of them were saying favorable things about Miguel. So the CodePlex Foundation is a new foundation that Microsoft has invested into that is independent of Microsoft. And frankly, I think it's a great idea. Its focus is on, first, I'm going to get this wrong. So go read the CodePlex Foundation's mission statement. Its focus is on making it easier for commercial entities to make code contributions to open source. And for proprietary software companies, this is a challenge because they don't know what the downstream ramifications are relative to things like implied patents. So does somebody else want to explain that? John, do you want to explain that or do you want me to take a crack at it? I don't want to monopolize the conversation here.
No, I haven't looked into it too much, but I think that pretty much sums it up from what I've seen. I haven't really investigated it too much. The main thing that seemed to be the big news story was that Sam Ramji had left Microsoft to work there. So other than that, I've not really seen much about it. I mean, what I'm unsure about is how it compares to, if we're looking at patents, how it compares to things like the Open Innovation Network and the existing set of experience that some companies have developed from working in an open source capacity. But I can imagine it's pretty useful for proprietary software companies where that's just not the world that they live in. You know, if you live in an open source company, you understand how this stuff works. But if you're a proprietary software company, the world seems very, very different to you. So it seems like a good idea to me.
Yeah, the question of implied patents is the thing that I think is really important for proprietary software companies. First of all, let me state soundly that patents are bullshit and they don't belong in software. But beyond that, let me say that if I'm a commercial software company and I have certain patents that protect whatever IP, which again, I'll defer to my previous statement, it's very scary for me to make contributions because it could set a precedent that could then undermine my you know, patent protection other places, and I'm not aware of that. So that's really one of the facets that CodePlex Foundation is there to help with.
Cool.
Yeah. We'll see how it works out. I think it's one of those things whereby there's a bunch of people kind of looking on it interestingly and not necessarily shit-canning it right now, but sort of seeing how it works out. And, you know, I certainly wish them all the best. Hopefully it'll work out well.
Yeah. And about Sam Ramji, of course, we should plug his, he's got an interesting startup. I don't know how much of it's public, so I won't say anything. But I don't know if it is or not, but he's got a really interesting startup. I think it's a great opportunity for him. He's going to be really successful there. I'm sure that the company is going to be really successful. I know it has to do with cloud hosting, throttling things. So I'm not going to say anything beyond that because I don't know if I can. So I don't.
Yeah. I had a rumor I had a rumor that it was about kittens playing guitars on the internet, something like that. Some kind of merchandising exactly opportunities.
Yeah.
I must have it wrong. So what's the MindTouch connection to CodePlex?
You know. I don't know. Sam and I've become friends over the last couple of years. You know, obviously MindTouch has built up a pretty sizable presence in open source. So we've got a 16, 20 million active users out there and hundreds of thousands of active installations.
Wow.
Yeah, and our software just turned 3.
That's amazing.
In July.
That's amazing.
It's an amazing growth rate. Yeah.
I guess we're doing
something
right.
You can blow out your own birthday candles.
Well, and the interesting thing is that we did it with a total investment in Google AdWords of $5,000 a month.
Wow. So, that's great.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. We kind of killed it. And really it's not MindTouch. It's the people who are really, really passionate about what we're doing and helping to spread the word. Without them, obviously, you know, them and God, of course, and my mom.
So what's the future hold? I mean, where do you see where you've been around for 3 years? Great. As in the words of a wise Kazakhstan man, great success. What's next?
I guess I should have been prepared for this question. I think our platform really does provide an interesting alternative to SharePoint from the standpoint that it's completely standards compliant. Everything's over HTTP. It's stateless. It's easy to extend. You're not trapped in a platform. We'll see how this grows. I mean, I think that we really have the potential to build this into a large blockbuster software company that has a very strong open source component. I mean, yeah, I guess that's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. Keep on rocking.
Yeah, exactly.
And throwing good parties, apparently. Is that is that 20 million seats or is it just 20 million downloads? I mean, what number, what does that represent, that number?
So that's installations that I can track how many users that they have hitting.
Oh, that's a real number.
Unfortunately, those are not paying customers.
Yeah. No, that's all right.
We have about 1,000 paying customers though.
Oh, that's good. That's a good start.
You just got a dollar from each of those customers.
Well, they got $1,000.
20 million.
Something like that. No, you get 10 seats for 1,000. So that's $100 each. I'm doing the math right now.
Oh man.
Obviously I was never very good at math. So, need, you know, it's funny because when we talked to you a couple of years ago, I thought, boy, this would be great for Twit. And then as I understand it better, it's not really what we need, because we want something that's all public facing. Although I guess that's what the Washington Post is doing.
Yeah, it's perfect for what you're doing at Twit. And especially from the standpoint of, you know, that media, you look at who runs Gov and it'll give you a perfect idea. I mean, it's a perfect example of what you should be doing at Twit.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Yeah. So I have to reevaluate. We are running a media wiki, but
we've got a migration tool. We can migrate it over for you. We did it for Mozilla and hundreds of other people too. So
now we're cooking with gas. All right.
Start downloading, Leo. Start downloading.
I like the idea of that.
You've only got 10 minutes before
you need to get your people to talk to Aaron's people.
Well, you know, and it's true. As much as I'm used to wiki syntax and love it, it's not something that just, you know, invites people to get involved in editing. You know, it's a little bit something to learn.
So,
Bruce S. in IRC, I like his idea. He says that, Leo, you should download this and replace all the Twit infrastructure.
Yeah, who needs infrastructure? Well, it's true. I mean, it that's the theory, right? Is you can pull in stuff from everywhere. You can make it very interactive. And I have to say, we had been looking at the idea of maybe running a Wave server and doing that with Wave. So he's absolutely right.
Well, and also, have you checked out Kaltura? Have you guys had Kaltura on the show yet?
No, what's that?
So it's the open source video editing stack where you can do, it's like a wiki for video editing where you can have multiple parties doing video editing. Oh, and wow. Then you can see like a timeline diff and everything's revisioned. They have a content distribution network. You got to check these guys out. And MindTouch has integration with them. They're awesome.
I should. See, I've made the mistake. I should have gone crowdsourcing for everything all along.
Including the shows.
Yeah. Well, I kind of am crowdsourcing the shows. What do you think you guys are? But you're the crowd.
Oh, thanks.
We'll get Kel Kerr on soon. That way Leo can see that in action as well.
Yeah. Are we going to get them on? We should get them on. Yeah.
They're on the list.
How do you spell that?
K-A-L-T-U-R-A.
Randall's got it. It's K-A-L-T-U-R-A.
That sounds really interesting.
So, Aaron, so sorry, go ahead. And then I'm going to ask you a tough question.
I was just going to plug the open source think tank in Paris right now. A lot of folks are, I know the Kaltura guy's there, I know Larry from Sugar Serum's there. So there's a lot of the open source enterprise software guys that are currently at the Alliance open source think tank in Paris. And I know there's my business development guy, Mark, is there. It's a great event. They're doing it with the Open World. I don't know what the, some other conference is in association with it. So it's kind of like an OSCON too.
Cool.
So, you know, as the IT industry has progressed, there's been kind of like big innovations and then people swarm around it. So years back, it would be IDEs. Everyone was going crazy about offering enterprise IDEs and people would get into the IDE business and then it would be completely overflowed. And then people would make no money and get out of it. And it seemed like it was kind of going that way for enterprise wikis because, you know, arguably one of the most popular technologies in the world right now in the IT world is wikis, because a lot of people know about MediaWiki. Do you feel like the industry is getting a bit swamped with enterprise wikis in the same way that kind of the cloud industry is getting a bit swamped right now?
Yeah, I think it did. I'm going to pull up a link real quick. I think it absolutely did get really saturated. And I mean, it's not just the wiki space. It's something larger than that. It's what a lot of people are calling, I know, God forbid, this is so cheeseball, but enterprise 2.0.
So made a stick in my mouth. Sorry.
So, you know what they mean by that is, you know, easier to use collaborative software for the enterprise. You know what it means. But that market got very, very saturated. And, I was looking up, I'm going to post to IRC this video. The video is actually at the bottom of that blog post. So for folks, you might want to take a look at that. It's on the mindtouch.com/blog. It's like the collaborative networking, how it's different. There's a great video that kind of shows how MindTouch fits in that marketplace. But to your point, Jono, you're absolutely correct. And then when I was doing this video, I was coming up with a list of enterprise 2.0 vendors. And I realized that, holy shit, they're all dead. They've all gone out of business in the last year. So it's like there's some holdouts that were very early to market in like 2001, 2002. Then there was the huge wave of them that began, quite frankly, about the same time MindTouch began, 2005. And they've all gone out of business. I get these faxes here at my office of trying to sell the companies. And then another friend of mine who's in this space who runs a business, Central Desktop, great guy, Isaac Garcia, he gets them too. And we look at these revenue sheets on these companies. And we're like, my God, you guys were doing awful, and your brands—you must have put everything in marketing, you know. So yeah, I think we're already seeing the collapse. I think we're in the middle of it right now. And MindTouch is still posting, you know, 20% to 50% growth quarter over quarter.
I was going to say, it seems like you're doing really well. I've dealt with some other companies in the same space, and they've been talking a big game, but they've not been playing a big game. And it seems like you've got the numbers to back you up, which is incredible.
Yeah, I think that the you know, open source is how you should build a software company. You engage the community first, obviously, by giving them a quality product and being honest and authentic. They'll help you lower the cost of customer acquisition. That's how MindTouch has been a strong growing company. It's really because of that.
Wow, cool,
fantastic.
Well, we're glad we could get you on, Aaron, to talk about it. It's now I have a lot to think
pleasure.
About. I wish I had a CIO.
Dane. Dane is awesome.
He's pretty good, isn't he?
He's wonderful. All right. I'm going to steal Dane. I'm going to make Dane an offer he can't refuse.
I'm going to task him with figuring out how to get Mind Touch involved in everything we do. That'll keep him busy for a while.
Yeah. Then you Bruce can have S. Him. Bruce S. Might be able to advise you.
Yeah, he seems to be all for it, doesn't he?
I think it's being sarcastic. People are being kind now.
Pretty sure he's being sarcastic.
Great to talk to you again, Aaron. It's nice to see you again. And congratulations on the success of Mind Touch. People can go to mindtouch.com to find out more. And the download, as you said, was mindtouch.com/download?
Correct.
All right. That's the place to go for that.
Very good.
Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks, Aaron.
All right, guys. Have a great day. Thanks so much.
Great to talk to you, Aaron. Take care.
Thank you,
pal. Aaron
Fulkerson.
That guy.
Don't mess with the guy's name.
No, I didn't mean it on purpose. I just by accident I slipped.
Freudian slip.
Well, it wasn't even Freudian. I think it was genuine. I think it was.
I think we're gonna Freud had nothing to do with it. A dirty tag. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
An Anoidian slip.
So it is a hard one to put your mind around because it does so much. And I think in a way you do it a disservice by calling it a wiki. I understand that that's kind of the starting point, but it's so far from a wiki. It's almost to me it's got dashboard elements. It's when you compare it to SharePoint and Lotus, it's really a collaborative environment. It does a lot.
Maybe it's called Mind Touch because people are scratching their heads trying to figure out what's going on there. So
touch the mind. But this is a problem, isn't it? If you want to create something new and innovative and completely different, it's very hard for people to understand it. We put stuff in categories and boxes. Well, if it doesn't fit
exactly
that box.
It's like describing Google Wave. I mean, I keep hearing about it, but I don't quite get it all the way yet. Even the demos sort of help me understand it a little bit, but I'm sure they're having the same issue with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you do something so different, there's no category you can easily pop it into. The movie doesn't get made, the book doesn't get written, and the software doesn't hit the shelf.
So they're going to get a lot more of the same all the time.
Yep.
They've had tremendous. I didn't realize they were as successful as they were.
I mean, I
met Aaron for the first time at the party, and he's a great guy, and I think he's very genuinely committed to not only obviously building a successful business, but also the concept and cause of open source. And I had no idea they were anywhere near as successful as they are right now today. So it's a pretty tremendous story.
Yeah. Well, and maybe it's true that one of the reasons I have a hard time understanding it is it's an enterprise product that people in enterprise get. You know, I mean, if they're using SharePoint or they're using other dashboards or collaborative services, for them, it's like, oh, yeah, I see where this fits.
Good stuff.
Well, thank you for
happy days.
Happy days.
So speaking of happy days, shall we talk about who's coming up next?
Let's do that, shall we?
Let's do that. Let's go down the rundown. Well, coming up next week, I've been looking at this one for a while. This is Peter Higgins of the Dojo Toolkit is going to be on. That's yet another user interface, JavaScript layer, JavaScript libraries to do things. We've had, we had jQuery on and a couple of others, UE. And this is in-app framework. Although it was interesting, I saw a recent comparison between the Dojo Toolkit and jQuery, and this is Dojo is a lot faster and better. So we'll let him duke it out a little bit when he comes on the show. Coming up immediately after that, Johnny, you want to talk about who Roy is?
Yeah. So is that the 14th of October, if I remember right? Mm-hmm. So on the 14th of October, I'm really excited about this. Arguably one of the most controversial figures in open source at the moment. We're going to be interviewing Roy Shestowitz, who is one of the key people behind the Boycott Novell project. Roy is coming
still
up.
They're still boycotting Novell, or is that
there's a lot of boycotting going on?
Really?
And Roy he doesn't do many interviews, but I asked him a while back to come on Floss, and he was reluctant at first, but he popped up and said, "Can I come on the show?" And we've made it happen. So really excited to hear from Roy and his thoughts on the evil that is Novell.
Wow.
and the angels that are the Boycott Novell projects.
And also on the, that'll be a good show, definitely. And also on the short list, we have Bree Pettis, who was one of the key figures in MakerBot, which is a 3D printer. We've got Rob Savoy from the Ganache project talking about the open source Flash clone that he's made. We have Danny O'Brien and Jim Killock on the open rights group. Actually, John, you want to describe that a little bit too?
Sure. So the Open Rights Group is basically a UK equivalent to the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And Danny O'Brien was one of the founders of that. He's now based in San Francisco, I think, but founded that in the UK back in Blighty. But he's just generally been heavily involved in the EFF. And he was also one of the people behind NTK, this popular e-zine some years back, which unfortunately no longer exists. He's a funny guy, and he looks like the guy who plays Superman in Smallville.
So, well, that's all I know.
There's an important connection there.
And a number of great guests coming up after that. If you want to see the whole list, it's at twit.tv/floss. There's a link there right directly to my spreadsheet that's maintained live. You can always suggest
is that
guests.
Is that link
me.
Now okay for you? Do you approve of that link? Yes.
You updated it, and it's fine now. Thank you, Leo.
I apparently was breaking and violating all the rules of web typography or whatever it is, zography.
And see, if you've been using MindTouch, I'd be able to edit it myself. So there we go.
Well, there you go. That's exactly why I don't use MindTouch. As a matter of fact, now you've finally hit on another reason I don't want to use MindTouch. You just go here, and you can take a peek at guests we're working on.
Click here we
that.
Are.
See that see whole thing. That whole phrase is a link now.
All wow. 190 people that are listed there. So if you see somebody not on the list, no, if you don't, do this every time. If there's somebody you want on the list that isn't there yet, send me an email. My email address is listed up there as well. You can also follow me on Twitter at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. You can follow John O'Bacon at John O'Bacon. It sounds just like yep. it sounds. And yep. And yeah, so I'm also doing live streaming. Oh, if you're in the Phoenix area in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to AstraCon, which is the conference for the Asterisk phone server that we had the head of the Asterisk company. I forget his name. He's going to kill me for not remembering. John something, is it? What is Asterisk? He had him on the show like 2 years ago, and I can't remember his name. Anyway, I'll get to see him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he was very cool. He was very young, too. I remember that. He was like 22 or something. Really crazy. He's got this
great.
Big
I
company.
Really like him.
So I'm going to be meeting him face-to-face at the conference. So if you're in the Phoenix area, I'll be at AstraCon in a couple of weeks.
That should be very fun.
Uh-huh. When you first said that, I thought you said AstraCon, and I thought it was like some kind of conference designed for people who bought the old Vauxhall Astra car in the UK. So that's one approach. No,
it's a conference for people who make a lot of footnotes.
Oh, Lordy.
Is it that time already?
We should wrap it up.
I think it's time. Thanks, I don't guys. Think it could get any crazier than this. So, everybody, thank you for being here. Thank you, Jono and Randall. I will not be here next week. I'm going to be in Dubai, but you guys pretty much don't need me anyway. I just sit here and nod a lot. So
just the eye candy.
I'm here for the looks. I don't think I'll have anything to say about Dojo Toolkit, so I think it's just as well I'm not here for that one. But I'll be back in 2 weeks with you for boycotting Novell. Maybe I'll take another week off. We'll see you. Thank you, everybody, for being here. You can watch the show happen live at 1:30. Pacific time, that's 4:30 Eastern time every Wednesday at live.twit.tv. But it's best if you subscribe to the many fine feeds available through you. Actually, there's only one, and it's at iTunes or Zune, or you can use Lemon. We are going to at least temporarily discontinue making an OGG version, although I think we'll crowdsource that because of our new workflow, which allows for one and only one canonical version of every show. And it was a choice between making only an OGG version or making only an MP3 version. Guys, do you want me to make only an OGG version of the show?
No. Okay. I want to be able to listen to it on my iPhone.
Yeah. So we only have a few hundred OGG listeners. I do know that many of you, because MP3 is a patent encumbered format, refuse to or cannot listen to any version of this show without having an OGG version. So we'll make an OGG Vorbis version. Or we'll ask our audience to make an OGG version available. If you'd like to volunteer for that, do you want to put out your email address? Anybody? Randall? I guess Floss at twit.tv.
I'm super writing anyway about the show. It's fine. Floss Merlin@stunhitch.com or Floss at twit.tv. That's fine. Yeah, either
send
one.
Send it to Floss at twit.tv.
I've just been slapped in the IRC channel for being silent. I definitely would like to see an OGG version. I think it'd be nice if we had OGG only, but I don't think it'd also be nice if we had an audience. So exactly. Much as I love OGG and it's the way forward, most people listen to MP3s.
But... Hey, absolutely. Get me wrong. If OGG, everybody went to OGG, I'd be much happier.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm sure that, when we did Lug Radio, we used to crowdsource a bunch of like mirroring and things like that. Yeah. I'm sure there's an enthusiastic community out there, one of which is Lullaby on IRC, who appears to be slapping me in the IRC channel. So well volunteered. Thanks, Lullaby.
Otherwise, it's probably true that we could write a little script that would use FFmpeg and spit it out somewhere. Yep. We'll figure
sounds
it
like
out.
Sounds like a great job for someone else.
Exactly. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week on Floss Week.